Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2018. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is Thursday's Brighton Festival special. We are here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and isn't it Tuesday today?
Yeah, it is actually, yes.
Right, okay, well, you know.
I've just lost the day in festival frivolity.
Too much fun, Melita. Where are we? We are in Brighton, though. You're with me there, are you?
I'm in Brighton.
You're
and
in Brighton.
It's Tuesday.
Okay, for the next 2 weeks, or maybe for Melita, it'll be 6.5 hours.
Who knows?
We'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators, and people who make it happen. Today, that's Tuesday, we're finding out about a circus piece where the performers turn themselves into animals.
We're going to be hearing French music of Courtly Love.
And we'll be previewing a remarkable South African singer.
And finding out if Gilbert and George can still shock in the 21st century. Along with reviews and previews, hopefully we'll be previewing something which is still to come, not yesterday, in the next day here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Oh, Rebecca, nice to have you back in the festival co-pilot hot seat.
Well, it seems that I'm needed, Melita, because there seems to have been a slight slippage in quality in
yes,
my absence for one day.
Somebody needs to know what day it is. I was here yesterday, you know.
Do you know
so
who the festival director is this year?
Isn't it Vanessa Redgrave?
Yeah. Okay, very good. Very good, very good.
Anyway, what you missed yesterday, we had a cracker of a show yesterday.
Of course you did, yes.
And it was lovely to hear your piece from Pivot, where you went on that seesaw down on the seafront and asked questions. And Pivot was not very communicative with you.
It was far from my easiest interview. I've noted that if you're talking to artificial intelligence machines and trying to get them to sing along with you, it wasn't working. She wasn't very happy. And also, I was on the seesaw on my own. And I think had I had someone to counterbalance with, and also sort of maybe she didn't understand me and my accent.
Well, I had a similar problem because I went on it and went on her pivot, she. And all she wanted to do was ask me about the meaning of life. So I'm quite the wrong person to ask about.
Well,
that.
I don't know. If she'd asked you what day it was, you'd have struggled. So the meaning of life would have been really problematic.
Yes, yes. So also in yesterday's programme, we were talking about A Tractor, which opens tonight and tomorrow at Brighton Dome. So if you want to catch up with the stuff that we've been talking about on the festival programme, then do go to Radio Reverb's podcast. You can find out all about that. And we also heard from Jack, who was co-presenting yesterday, who went down to Belonging at the Bandstand, which is also taking place this weekend coming up. So and two weekends, actually.
And A Tractor, we're going to see this evening.
So going to go and see it this evening, so we'll talk about it tomorrow. Yeah. So there you go. So this is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. It's Tuesday's festival programme. I got the day right there. And the lunchtime classical concerts in the Brighton Festival are a great opportunity to wind down in the middle of the day and catch some of the future musical stars of the classical world. Tomorrow's concert at 1pm in St Nicholas's Church features Les Casper Girls. They're a French quartet, 1, 2, 3, 4, yes, they're all here, playing songs of courtly love from the 17th and 18th century Baroque era. So I think we probably better start off and hear your first piece.
Coule disait à sa bergère, pressée d'un amour sans égal. Coule disait à sa bergère, pressée d'un amour sans égal. Coule disait à sa bergère, pressée d'un amour sans égal. Malgré que ton cœur est brutal, tu te mets toujours en colère. Malgré que ton cœur est brutal, tu te mets toujours en colère. La quelqu'un ne soit pas si sévère, qu'on ne te pointe mal. La quelqu'un ne soit pas si sévère, qu'on ne te pointe mal.
was live in our Bijou studio in Brighton Open Market. It's a very, very tiny studio. We have four of Les Casper girls here. We have Alice, Axel, Alban and Barbara. Welcome to Radio Reverb.
Thank you too, welcome.
Thank you very much for joining us. Alban, I'm going to ask you if you can shuffle a teensy bit closer to the microphone.
Yep.
First of all, I'm going to ask you, what is this magnificent instrument you're playing? It's like an enormous lute.
So I first apologise for my bad English first.
It's better than our French, possibly.
Okay. So it's a plucked instrument. It's the same family as guitars. And it's a baroque instrument. So you have just a normal neck like a guitar, but mm-hmm. a different tuning. And they add a double neck with just basses in some like gam. Yeah, and the more higher notes. So that's it.
It looks very difficult to play.
It's like everything we have to learn. But yeah.
Okay, so tell me about the songs that you're playing, because they're not very well known songs. So in the Baroque repertoire we might know the work of Bach, but you play songs that are not so well known. Why have you chosen to do that?
Yeah, for a woman who knows Baroque French music, the most famous style of music, it's air de cour, which are the official court songs, like at the time of the king, Sun King. And we are playing the parallel of this air de cour, which called Brunette. It's like air with popular roots, and it's in a way more simple because it's more popular. It's for middle and upper class, not nobles. And so they talked about love, they talked about mythology, and most of the time with one or two voices and with a small group of instruments, like my instruments, arclute and viola da gamba, to make an accompaniment for the lyrics.
Now, when you were performing that, I think it lost something on radio because the two singers, there was a bit of confrontation and acting and drama. And did I hear the word colère? A bit of a fight going on.
Yeah, of course. All this song tell a story. And this story, it's a story of some Colin. It's his name. And he's living some bergère. I don't know the name in English. I'm sorry. Pastoral things.
Farmer. And farmer, I think. Yeah. It's a farmer, isn't it?
Yeah. Countryside or something. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe is that. And he's angry because she doesn't want to be in love with him. And this is a funny song, actually. This one is a funny song. Not all are funny, but this one, yes.
Well, so she is in love with him, or she doesn't want to be in love with him.
She doesn't want to be, but he wants absolutely to.
Oh, it's the never-ending story of the man who wants the woman who wants nothing to do with her. It's the Me Too scenario in Baroque terms.
It's kind of that. It was really at the same time than today, and so, yeah.
Okay. Hashtag Me Too Baroque.
So I get the feeling then that when people come and see Les Casper Girls, it's a very visual experience as well as the beauty of the sound. So this is an important part of what you do, so the performance part as well.
Absolutely, we try to make alive this music as much as possible, even if four centuries are between this music and us. But we try; it's our language, so we can understand and try to make it.
So you're all very young. What appeals to you about this music? You know, you're not playing Kanye West on these instruments. What is it you like about this music in particular that makes you want to play it?
Yeah, we all begin really young with Baroque music. Like for us, Barbara and I start at like 6 and 5 years uh-huh. old with our instruments, and also for the singers. So we all our life was full of this music. And of course, you can do different things, but there is such a big repertory in Baroque music. You can spend your whole life without getting boring.
Well, I'm going to return to your instrument then, because did you start playing that ginormous version of a lute at five or six. It's twice as big as a five-year-old. It must be twice as big as a five-year-old, that instrument.
Yeah, it was it's a little one, Renaissance lute, actually. This one is a Baroque instrument, and I start with a Renaissance lute, which is like half the size.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I was seeing this little five-year-old, like, with the...
Yeah.
I think it's probably time for another song.
Yes please.
C'est une charmante rive, la Belgique que j'aime tant. C'est une charmante rive, la Belgique que j'aime tant. L'autre jour en s'approchant, mais d'une voix latine.
Beautiful, beautiful. Le Casperger Girls. You are performing at St. Nicholas's Church in Brighton, which is the first of a few UK dates. Have you been to St. Nicholas's Church yet to
Never,
have a look?
Never, and it's the first time we are in Brighton, and for me it's the first time I'm in England my life. So.
Welcome to Brighton, welcome to England. And you are in for a treat. St. Nicholas's is Brighton's oldest church, so it's the mother church of Brighton. It's beautiful. Wow. It's beautiful. And I can guarantee you will have a fantastic audience who will love you too.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to be there.
So thank you very much for joining us. I think we ought to have one more song as you're
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. I thought I was being transported to the gardens of Versailles, but your description tells me it's more likely to have been a chateau in the Loire region with the middle class bourgeoisie there than the Versailles. So I'm going to go to the Loire and I'm going to have a little verre of something.
A little glass of champagne.
A Touraine, a white Touraine, I think. Anyway, let's have some more music. Marvellous.
Change sans cesse, je ne veux plus aimer rien que ma houlette et mon chien. Je ne veux plus aimer rien que ma houlette et mon chien.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely thank amazing. Thank you so much, Les Capsper Girls. So collectively, Alice, Axel, Alban and Barbara, very good luck with your show in the Brighton Festival.
St
Nicholas's Church, 1 p.m. on Wednesday. One of the lunchtime concerts in the Brighton Festival. One off, one chance only. Don't miss it. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Reverb. Cheers. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
That's amazing. Loved it.
So I just tweeted out a photo of them, and I'm just in the process of tweeting out a little video et. So if you want to see what they look like and see this incredible instrument here as well, then do go to Radio Reverb's Twitter. Hopefully someone from Radio Reverb will retweet it. I'm going to be talking later on in the programme about Fauna, which is a theatrical circus dance performance show, and that's going to be coming up at the Theatre Royal, opening tomorrow till Saturday. Also, I popped down to the Gilbert and George exhibition at Brighton Museum, so we'll be talking about that as well, and catching up on some of the things that we've seen and what's still to come in the festival.
Oh, I think it's time for a breath, though. Have you got some music?
Let us do that. Okay, Great Escape taking place this weekend. Playing some acts who are performing there with a local connection. This is Night Town, and the track is First Cry.
My darling.
Chilled out sounds there. That's Knightstown. Track is First Cry. Knightstown playing The Great Escape this coming Saturday lunchtime, 12:15. That's at One Church, and they're part of the Fat Cat roster. It's an esteemed Brighton label. Rebecca, wasn't that gorgeous? That beautiful, beautiful work for the Capsburger Girls.
It was stunning. I've seriously forgotten that moment where someone starts to play Baroque music, that you are transported somewhere. And genuinely, you know, in the studio, which isn't the most luxurious environment to be transported.
It's quite tiny.
It is.
It's quite warm.
It is. And they transported us somewhere very, very different. It was lovely. Really great stuff.
The Brighton Festival 2018. The sound of your city.
Well, it's all been happening in the Brighton Festival. We've been out and about. Rebecca, you went to see Travis Alabanza on Saturday. I wasn't sure what to expect from this, from the programme. I'm sure maybe you weren't either.
No, I wasn't. And you know what? I went along having spoken to them on via Skype for an interview for Radio Reverb, and was so captivated by the conversation that we had and what Travis was saying that I thought, you know what, I've got to go along to this show. And you know I love Eurovision. I took time out. I missed Eurovision to catch the Before I Step Outside You Love Me at the Breithelm Centre. And I do not regret doing that. It was a really great show. The support act, and I'm sorry I didn't write down her name, I haven't got the name, and so I can't share that with you, but fantastic Brighton artist doing some poetry at the start of the set. And the whole thing was, it's an evening of black trans poetics. And for me, I sat there and I was challenged to reassess some of my feelings and some of my assumptions about my behaviour and my... And I had the conversation with the two friends that I went with, and we, also white, had a conversation about that, and entered into discussing gender identity and what it was to be called cisgender. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting piece of work, and I really enjoyed it.
One of those pieces that you take away a lot from it, and you continue the conversation afterwards.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
I'm always interested to know what the audience is like for an event like that, because when it's something that's, you know, there's a woman doing it as a central character, it tends to have a mainly female audience. If it's a black piece of work, it's a black audience. If it's a if it's an LGBTQ piece of work, and it seems like there's not much kind of crossover of audiences going to see stuff outside their own kind of identity group.
Well, what was great about that, and I think this is the conversation when I interviewed Travis about this, that the conversation around it is a piece for everybody, and actually it truly was, because the audience was very mixed.
Good.
And within there was a moment where the cisgender people were told, now shut your eyes, and trans people were invited to come up and party on the stage with party poppers, and the cisgender people had to promise not to look. So it's kind of like saying, now we can have our party.
Nice.
And you can film it. You know, it was very much, but there was, in a way, the whole way through, Travis was saying, if you want to leave, you can leave. If you want to stay, you can stay. It's fine. It wasn't in a confrontational, aggressive way. Although at the same time, there's some very powerful emotions there. It was a great evening. I liked it.
Terrific, terrific. I mean, that's one of the things about doing this programme, because you look at the festival blurb and you think, not sure about that. But obviously, when we get to meet some of the performers on the programme and talk to them, it really gives you a proper kind of behind-the-scenes look at what's actually, you know, the motivation, what people people can expect from the shows.
Yeah, and it was great to see, because my concern on that night was that that show was up against Adam, another trans piece, and also up against Eurovision.
Yeah.
And there was a good crowd in there. You know, it wasn't a sellout, but there was definitely a good crowd in the house. So, you know, coming back to when we spoke to Andrew, the director of the festival, you know, that sense that tickets are selling well.
Great, great. And I went to see Kaya by Jada Tank last night at the Theatre Royal. Beautiful piece, a dance piece, all female dancers, 16 dancers. I think four of them were professional dancers and the rest of them were a teenage troupe who'd been working with Jada Tank. And it's a piece which is based around themes of migration and displacement. So Kaya is a village in Turkey which had Greek and Turkish citizens. 100 years or so ago, the Greek citizens were displaced and moved on out the village. Now, there's a thing about dance that, you know, sometimes you see the narrative, sometimes you get the narrative, sometimes you don't. I didn't particularly get a sense of displacement. I got a sense of movement, and they were working as ensembles, so they were working all together on stage at some point. A lot of kind of catching people as they fell. There was a lot of movement where they were climbing over each other's backs, so you did get a sense of moving over mountains, moving over difficult terrain, falling, being picked up, being carried on.
So a lot of support. A lot of support, the journey.
Yes, yeah. But a very, very beautiful piece. And, you know, the strength and athleticism of those female dancers as well. Lots of Turkish folk dance within it, which is really beautiful, and Turkish music throughout. So, you know, music with a really, really strong beat and that beautiful Turkish flavour to it. I thought it was an absolutely amazing piece. Sadly, only on for one night. So, you know, if you missed out on that one, then do try and catch that one again if it returns to Brighton.
And fear not, we have just been speaking about things that have been and gone, but we're about to do some previews.
We are. So it's probably time to move on to a preview now, because I can see our next sort of studio guests are lurking outside and they're looking like they really want to get stuck into it.
Right. So shall we start with a preview now? So The South African singer appears at St George's Church in Kemptown this Saturday afternoon. Radio Reverb's Mark Johnson from Slipstream previews Narcane to give you a taste of what's in store.
When lost, did go to Bacchanalia. This is a singer from South Africa called Narcane. You know the one that puts me in hysteria. He's a relative newcomer to the global music scene, very much a trailblazer for the LGBTQ community in South Africa. He's only 30 years old and has the most powerful voice. The first album that he released was much more of a folky type album and frankly was a bit of a disaster. It was not very well received at all. And the second album, You Will Not Die, is his whole career has moved on and moved up quite a few notches. He came out, became openly gay in his 20s, a real figurehead in the gay community in South Africa. He's completely rejected the Christian church in South Africa. The film that he stars in, The Wound, is a film about the taboo of being a young gay man in the Xhosa community of South Africa, which is the second largest ethnic group in the population in South Africa.
Oh,
Great stuff. That's Akani there, appearing on Saturday the 19th of May. And watch out for this one, because it's on at 2:30 in the afternoon at St George's Church. Some great gigs on there, so make sure you get yourself along to the church. There's vocal sounds, and the acoustics in there are really fantastic if you haven't seen them before. And he is tipped for some big things, I can tell you. Great, great singer.
That's Radio Reverb's Whispering Mark Johnson from Slipstream previewing Nakane, who's at St George's Church on Saturday. Do not be deceived by the time. He's on at 2:30, and I think one not to be missed for that. There's some great names on in Brighton Festival, so lots of people that you wouldn't quite expect to see, and I think that's going to be a real, real stonker of a gig. Moving on to The Great Escape, playing The Alternative Escape on Saturday in the North Lane pub from Brighton. This is Libra Libra, and the track is Animali. I think that's going to be a bit wild. You can catch them playing at the Alternative Escape on Saturday, 10 p.m. in the North Lane pub. That is Libra Libra from Brighton, and the track is Animali. You are listening to Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
And as if by magic, Animale. What could that link to? Ooh. Let's think. Wild animal noises, sounds. Ooh. Hang on a moment. Fauna opens tomorrow at the Theatre Royal until Saturday. It's circus and dance, where the performers transform themselves into spiders, lemurs, tree frogs and birds of paradise. Rhiannon Cave Walker and Matt Pasque.
We should have checked, shouldn't we first?
Yeah, I'm like, please help me, Matt. Help me. Matt Pasque.
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 Rhiannon, I'll start with you.
C'est français.
Rhiannon Cave Walker. Yes. Bah alors, we have had the French people in here. I can do that. It is Matt Pasque. Qu'est-ce que tu veux, tu veux parler de ton pièce, là, alors?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, tell us a bit about Fauna, Matt, as I've so gracefully misnamed you.
Well, Fauna is a piece with five acrobats, me being one of them and Rhiannon being another, mm-hmm. and one live musician, and he's a acoustic guitarist using loop pedals and like electronic boxes.
Percussive kind
yeah.
of
yeah, yeah, percussive
noises.
Style. Mm-hmm. And basically it's similarities and differences between human naivety, shall we say, and the animal kingdom, like more instinctive attributes of humans and animals. It's pretty abstract. It's not that we ever imitate an animal. You can perceive it to be what it is. Mm. We move in a way, and we talk with our bodies. There's no speech in it. It's purely physical
language.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm looking at you both, you're both sitting on the chairs now. Matt, you're sort of astride your chair, and Rhiannon, you've got your feet up and your legs kind of crossed. I can see the body movement already is that is there. You're sort of there's yeah. very dynamic movement. My other guests will come in and sit sort of, you know, feet knees together in front of the microphone. You're both like, right, this is my body language.
There's nothing normal about us now.
No. So I think it's called sprawling.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So how does that, I mean, does that sort of relaxing with your body and do that, does that help when you're creating a piece like this then?
Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, all of us in the company, we're all really close friends, all six of us, and we've all trained together and been friends with each other for many years. So, like, the physicality on and off stage is really close and very expressive. And so that also is in our personalities as well. So all this expressive kind of, yeah, movement and the relationship between all of us, that's really evident in our show.
Because this also combines its circus, its dance, its physical theatre, its acrobatics, as well as that friendship. You need to have a huge element of trust in each other, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, a lot. So much so. I mean, that is a huge thing just in circus in general that people comment on, is the trust in between the performers, as well as we have trust also in our musician, you know, to work alongside us live on stage, to follow us and
kind of narrate our movement, but definitely as like individuals, we're all so close and have a lot of trust in each other, like within physical movement, as well as kind of like trusting each other to have our backs on and off stage.
Yeah, because we've created this entirely from that our own, you know, heads and with the musician. So we kind of have composed the music with him. So it's all bespoke. So
I was looking at some of your videos, actually, and the movements, they are very, very impressive. They're very animal-like. Mm. So some of them are you moving individually. So are they kind of, you know, snaking across the stage floor? And some of them you are actually creating with sort of three or four of you, an animal. I mean, it must have been quite a lot of fun to get it right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it is, like what Matt said, like the whole show and also the animalistic characteristics in it is very abstract. So, yes, we are being and behaving animalistically. Can you say it?
Yeah.
We'll
allow it.
We'll allow it. But we're not actually, like, narrating specific characters. We are actually, like, creating, even as a duo or in a trio or as a whole collective, kind of our own animalistic... What do you call it?
Tendencies?
Yeah.
And you'll see when you come and see the show, everyone, that there's different bits that you could perceive as being, you know, that could clearly be, you know, a dog or a scorpion or something, and it's easier to see. And then there's much more abstract scenes where it's an organism, you know, and you couldn't tell what it specifically is.
That's what, I mean, I found interesting looking at a very short video that's on the Brighton Festival website. So if you're not sure what these guys are actually doing or talking about, do have a look at that quick excerpt on the Brighton Festival website of Fauna. And for me, you know, if anyone's thinking, oh, it's like little kids doing bunny rabbits, well, no, it's not. You know, the movement was fascinating, and that how close we are as humans to animal movement and managing to integrate the two. So the movement, you're thinking, hang on, are they doing an animal now or is that a human? And what do I move like that? That I found that fascinating. Did that come naturally, or was there a lot of sort of practice and saying, hang on, do that again? What, that? I mean,
it all kind of came quite organically.
Yeah, bits really. And bobs, really. Like there were bits that we were like, yeah, that's good, keep that, try and...
Who's the best spider and who's the best bird of paradise?
You're fighting over being the tree frog.
Yes, that's it. I mean, it is hard because they do all merge in together, you know, but the characters also come from, like, essence of ourselves and our personalities. That's how we derive the movement or developing the characters, because there have been moments where we've sat down and kind of talked about, oh, okay, what kind of animal, if you were an animal, what kind of animal are you? And we weren't trying to, like, pinpoint anything specific. It was more like just insight for inspiration.
It was like harnessing the rawness, really, of each of us.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, I took my inner recluse and, you know, you were heightened your kind of hyperactivity.
Squirrelness.
You know, yeah, it's kind of... these extremes in people's personalities and.
But you're an international ensemble, although you're based in Sweden. I was wondering how you all got together, because you all seem to have very different backgrounds. So Matt, your background's martial arts.
Yep.
And Rhiannon, yours is in the circus. At age four, you ran away to join the circus.
That's it. Yes, I did. I didn't really run away. My parents were just like, please go, harness that energy. And so, yeah, no, we're an eclectic mix. You know, we do have like lots of circus or martial arts, gymnastics, and Geordie. Well, he's
Geordie.
And Geordie. Yeah.
He's a finger gymnast.
Yeah.
With a instrument. But...
Thanks for clearing that up.
Moving swiftly on. The show is actually for anyone over four, I think it says on the thing, just so anyone was wondering about the finger activities going on. And you've got a matinee. I was thinking to do that twice in a day must be exhausting.
Yeah, we're not doing it twice in a day here, but we have.
Yeah.
It's just on the Saturday, it's just one show.
It's the matinee, 2:30 on Saturday.
But yeah, it's pretty tiring. We've done it twice before and we wouldn't want to do it more than that.
Yeah,
rather physical.
Yeah, it's physical, but then also, you know, we put all our emotional energy into it too, because we love the show and it's been created so close to our hearts, and it's a personal kind of artistic expression, I guess. So definitely doing two shows or more and trying to, it's exhausting, but somehow also the last show, you can always pull something extra out.
Normally the last show is better because
you're not kind of harnessing your energy. Yeah.
Wow, okay. So you've toured Fauna globally and you've won awards at Edinburgh and Adelaide Fringe Festivals, you know, which I think tells people that you must go and see Fauna.
So it's a clap, clap, thumbs up, isn't it?
Yeah. What does it mean to you to be performing in Brighton at the Brighton Festival?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, also kind of stepping up and performing in the festivals rather than the fringes is also, you know, we're honoured to be a part of it.
Yeah, to be able to be in the theatre.
Yeah. Rather than just floating in tents as well, which we do love. And it's nice to kind of be in the roots of it. But performing in theatres is always that little bit nicer for us because we can harness the energy and it's a lot more focused.
Yeah, and the lighting is always better.
Yeah.
And it's quite lighting dependent, the show.
And I think you haven't yet been to the Theatre Royal, but when you go there, you will go, wow, this is perfect.
Nice.
It's such a lovely, it's the sort of chocolate box version of a theatre. So if you take the perfect kind of London West End theatre and minimalise it, you've got the Theatre Royal. It's quite magical.
Yeah,
very, very, very historic place. Well, Rhiannon Cave Walker and Matt Pasquet from Fauna opens tomorrow. That's Wednesday at the Theatre Royal. Runs through until Saturday. So if you've not already grabbed your tickets, go to brightonfestival.org. Nab your tickets. Go to Theatre Royal box office. Go to the Dome box office. Grab your tickets, guys. I think this is going to be a bit of a festival hot
Don't
ticket.
Miss out.
Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Reverb.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Cheers, indeed. Well, this is Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival programme. We are creeping up towards the end of the hour, but we've got some other content to give you. That sounds a bit rubbish, doesn't it?
Well, I was looking at you thinking, what are you saying? Other content? Are you struggling? Are you going to play? Were you having a little bit of a tune? Or
I was having a little bit of a turning my page, actually, to see where we're going next. I think we should go to Gilbert and George, actually.
Gilbert and George.
Marvellous. They met at St. Martin's College. It sounds like there's a song in there. In 1967, they went on to become enfants terribles of the British art world with their confrontational imagery, dealing with themes of gay sex, masculinity, racism and hypocrisy. A series of their works is on at Brighton Museum, starting with early videos of the pair as singing statues and moving through their large-scale, brightly coloured work from the 1980s into a more contemplative but still in-your-face 1990s era. I went to the museum to meet curator of fine art Jenny Lund to walk me through the exhibition.
Underneath the arches, ivory white things away.
We have 16 works on display and we see works from 1969 until 1996. So quite a broad span of Gilbert and George's oeuvre, and from their early works where they are still establishing themselves as living sculpture and finding the iconic style of the grid structure that they end up using throughout their career. Through the 80s and the larger, more colourful and bold works, to the 90s where we see them nude for the first time in the New Democratic Picture Series.
We start off here with videos of Gilbert and George as their living sculptures. Their image has remained the same over the last 50 years or so, which is one of the things I kind of like about them. And I like the way they put themselves centre stage in their work. And that's very much the theme that's running through this exhibition.
Yeah, no, they describe their work as one big self-portrait in a way. And it is, but of course they're dealing with universal themes, using themselves as the starting point, but then raising issues around sexuality, identity, class. So much bigger issues that are relevant to all of us.
Now, Gilbert and George's pictures were exhibited in Belfast earlier this year, which drew, let us say, some protests from some of the clergy. Some of the pictures here actually are of that kind of quite challenging and sexual themes. What kind of response have you had from people visiting the gallery to come and see some of these images, which, you know, might actually to some people be quite shocking?
We've had debates about how do we warn people, because in a sense we don't want people to be prejudiced before walking into an exhibition. On the other hand, we also aware that people showing up with families want to know what they are going to be exposed to. So outside the gallery we do have a statement about Gilbert and George's work, including nudity and sexually explicit imagery and that sort of things. I do think some people thought that maybe the exhibition should have been aged for 18 and over. But we are in Brighton, so I think the tolerance is going to be quite different than maybe Belfast, without being too prejudiced.
So we're starting off in the first room. And we've got a lot of photographs from Gilbert and George's early period. Let's move through to the second room. There's a couple of video installations here. So we move on to what kind of period are we looking at here? 1980s.
Yes.
And very bold, very colourful. I'm looking at this image over here of Existers, which is a lot of young men who look like they're probably from drama school.
Actually, this image was quite controversial when Gilbert and George first made it. Gilbert and George were accused of exploiting rent boys, but that's all a myth. These are actually young men who were either their friends or models that were being paid for posing for Gilbert and George. This is a very much dedication to the beauty of male youth, the vitality of youth.
And very colourful, so contrasting to the first room with the black and white film and photographs. Moving into the second room, very, very bright, vivid colours.
Yeah, you see Gilbert and George starting to use the kind of blood red colours in the 70s. And in the first gallery, we have the image Crusade, where we have a strong yellow-red contrast. And then here in the 80s, we really see them breaking loose when it comes to colour, having shocking pink and green, and using a silver leaf. And it was also interesting to install. Because of them working in this grid structure, you would put one image up at a time. And it wasn't before you had put all 24 frames up, you would have the complete picture. So there was this whole anticipation in almost recreating their work.
And we've got the images over here, Thirst and Hunger, which I'm not going to describe. People can see them for themselves. But they might be the kind of thing you'd see on a toilet wall. But I see they're dated 1982. Which is when AIDS was first being known about. And I think, you know, these are very political images because they're very, very graphic, very sexual, but there's definitely a response to a suppression of imagery around homosexuality in the face of the AIDS crisis.
Yes, and Gilbert and George did actually an exhibition where they donated all the works to the AIDS campaign, and they lost several of their dear friends to AIDS. So that was something very conscious to them. And they have chosen this very cartoonish style. They're not photographs, they are actually photograms. So they had worked with cutouts and projections. So they have this very kind of grotesque feel to them. But they were saying that was kind of the only way they could get away with showing that kind of explicit scenes in a museum context. But I think they're really important for the reason you just mentioned. And some people may forget that, just being shocked by what they see. But when you think of the history of homosexuality and it only being legalized in 68, these images are really, really important to tell the history of some of a group of people who haven't really been represented in the art world before then. Gilbert and George don't really want us to speak about homosexuality or homoeroticism. They want us to speak about sexuality and eroticism and speak about the universal element and like the desire in all of us, but of course not to see these images within the context of queerness and homosexuality would be strange.
So this image here, Fallen Leaves from 1980, it stands out in contrast to the others, being in black and white.
It's one of the few images where Gilbert and George are not representing themselves, but a homeless person from their neighbourhood. Is a very striking, strong portrait where a homeless person who has scars or wounds in his face stares out at us, and we are confronted in a very like unavoidable way with the personality. And around him are leaves that almost have the texture of human skin. It's kind of like a vanitas image, reminding of us of the fragility of life, as well as exposing a real issue within British society.
And moving on to the third room here, images of Gilbert and George naked with their backs to us. They're holding their heads in their hands here. They're under the family tree over here. Quite confrontational images.
Yes, I guess so. I've been with them for so long that to me they aren't really confrontational any longer. But they're the first images, as I mentioned before, where Gilbert and George are shown naked. And I think it's really brave of them. These are from the early 90s. So Gilbert and George would have been around 50 years old, 50, 60 years old. So they are no longer in their youth. So it's like the middle-aged body. And I think it's really daring. These are the people we have seen all along in tweed suits being the English gentleman. And now they're going exposing themselves and showing a vulnerability. And I think it's very transgressive and very daring that they as artists there like are doing something like this. And I like ending with the In the Shit from 1996, which is from their Fundamental Picture series, where we see them from behind standing on a mountain of fecal matter, looking kind of into the future, surrounded with enlarged microscopic images of bodily fluid on either side. But it's almost like a fairy tale image. And here they have really worked with basic taboos, and again showing their kind of vulnerable, aged bodies that aren't particular beautiful, but still there is a sensitivity and beauty to the image itself, because of the using these microscopic images, you almost don't notice the abjectness of what you are looking at. So they draw us in for the beauty, and then they somehow shock us when we realize what the content is and confront us with our own values and our own morality.
Well, there you go. If you consider Gilbert and George to be an abomination in the sight of God, this is not going to change your mind. Jenny Lund, Brighton Museum's curator of fine art, talking about the Gilbert and George exhibition, runs at Brighton Museum through to September the 2nd. And your top tip is taking proof of local residency with you. And then you get free entry into the museum. And then it's £3.50 into the Gilbert and George exhibition. You haven't yet been to that, have you, Rebecca?
I haven't, and I'm very tempted to go and visit, and I have a nephew in town, and I may well take him along and see if he can come in and talk about that, or maybe about Model 2, the David Shrigley Model 2 piece, which is running throughout festival tomorrow.
There's is your nephew of a nervous disposition?
No, I'm just nervous around him. okay. I don't know what he might get up to.
I think he'll probably find it fine in that case. So lots of stuff happening in the Brighton Festival. It's a really, really jam-packed week. I'm looking at the things that are happening tonight because it is, in fact, Tuesday. I know what day it is now. And Ian Sinclair is... I love Ian Sinclair's work. An author who writes about psychogeography, really. So the kind of the nature of places, the ghosts of people in places, the way that places shape the way that people feel about their lives. He's going to be talking tonight at 8 o'clock at Brighton and Hove High School. And hip-hop legends, the godfathers of hip-hop, the Last Poets, are on at the Theatre Royal tonight. That's going to be a sizzling hot ticket. As we always say, if things look like they're sold out, it's often worth pitching up and trying your luck on the door, because there are often standbys, tickets get released, people's plans change, so tickets do reappear.
I'm pretty sure there's still tickets for A Tractor at the Dome Concert Hall tonight. That's not A Tractor as in...
what you drive
farm.
In the country. Yeah,
no, it's A Tractor as in... you are attracting me, Melita.
Oh, am I?
You are an attractor.
You frightened me now.
Yeah. This is a transcendent contemporary dance, and it looks rather fascinating. And I'm going along tonight. Are you coming along?
I'm going along. It's got live Indonesian music, so try and keep me away from that. Try and keep
so
me away.
So utterly hypnotic, apparently. So we'll have a look at that and maybe have a chat about it tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's on tomorrow night as well. So if you can't get in tonight, then do go along tomorrow. And Exforma, we've decided it's going to be Exforma rather than Transforma, is Wednesday to Sunday at the Spire up in that deepest, darkest Kemp Town, which is a mixture of electronics, and it's got a rather fantastic image of a kind of Tesla coil thing with electronic sparks coming out of it.
And if, like me, you're muddled by what Exforma, that's X-F-R-M-R in the programme, and I've just been going X-F-R-M-R, and apparently it's Exforma, but it's X-F-R-M-R. And I always find, actually, several times I've gone along to the Spire and there's been treats available in that space. It's a bit, you know, it's worth, I say it's worth the long trip. I live quite close to there in Kemp Town, so it's not a long trip for me. But for some people, they kind of think, well, I'm not going all the way to the Spire. That's like, you know,
get
this looks
there.
Fascinating.
Get up there. And we had the Spire on the programme last week. So if you hop along to Radio Reverb's Facebook and Twitter feed, you will find the programmes from last week, and you can hop onto the podcast. So a lot of the interviews are down there as mini bite-sized podcasts for those of you with a short attention span. You've been listening to the Brighton Festival Show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB and online. We're here Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 during the festival, repeated 10 p.m. and 9 a.m. the next day.
Let's thank all today's guests, these Capsper girls, all four of them, Rhiannon Cave-Walker and Mad Pasgay from Sforna, Jenny Lund, and our reporter Mark Johnson.
Going to play you out with Fauria, a Brighton band. They're going to be playing at St Mary's Church in the Altiscape this coming Saturday at 9:50 p.m. This is Fauria, Serotonin Unplugged. We're back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
It's the first night.